Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, Tim Sylvie here. Alongside me, as always, Tom McCluskey. Tom, how are you? What have you been up to?
I have been editing a lot this week, actually. Love a good edit.
YouTube life.
Was a bit ill earlier on in the week as well. Yeah, it's the YouTube life, exactly. But I'm feeling mostly better now. I've got a bit of a groggy throat, so I apologise for that. But yeah, it's good to be.
Cool. Well, listeners, today we're joined by a rising female star who presents Formula One. And as such, Tom, I thought I'd test you on your bread and butter today, the very subject of Formula One, with a couple of nice, very easy Formula One-related questions before we introduce our guest. So are you ready?
They're not going to be easy, are they?
They are easy. The first one is easy. If you get the first one wrong, you'll probably lose half of your YouTube subscribers.
No, don't put this pressure on me, man. Okay, come on.
Okay. With which team did Jenson Button win the 2009 Formula One World Championship?
Braun
GP, correct. Easy. See? Where's my sound effect? Hang on. Where's my applause sound effect?
Formerly Honda.
Yeah.
Then Braun. Yeah, Mercedes.
Yeah, well done. Okay, they get a little bit harder.
They better get harder.
Which race team has the record for winning the most races in an F1 season?
Oh, which team? I'm going to say... Is it Red Bull this year? It's Red Bull or Ferrari, but I'd say Red Bull.
Incorrect. It was 2016. Mercedes won 19 of 21 races.
Blimey. I completely glossed over them.
Who won the World Championship that year?
2016, Rosberg.
Rosberg, correct. And then promptly decided to leave the sport. Okay, one more for you. I love this one. And I was at this race, which is quite cool. This is when I first started working in Formula One. So at the 2005 United States Grand Prix, how many cars lined up on the grid?
Six. Two Ferraris, two Minardis, and two Jordans.
Oh, get in there. Correct. Do you know the reason why? Can you remember the reason why?
Yeah, because Bridgestone wouldn't... It was only the Bridgestone runners who went out because the Michelins, they kept failing around the bank in the Indy.
Yeah.
And they couldn't come to a concession, so the Bridgestones end up just going for the dub. So you got... What was it in the Jordan on the podium? It was, ooh. I can't remember his name. Mom begins with M, doesn't it?
Got me there. My research has let me down. But you're 100% right.
Montero. I'm sure it's Montero. I think it's
okay.
Montero.
Okay. Yeah. No, very good. Yeah. Good knowledge. Yes, exactly what happened. And that was one of the first races I ever went to. Absolutely bizarre set of circumstances. And the FIA digging their heels in. Well, I suppose the team's deciding not to. But yeah, fascinating stuff. Anyway, shall I introduce today's guest?
Do it.
So today we're joined by Arianna Bravo, who went from consultant to F1 content creator to F1 presenter. She's a passionate advocate for diversity and inclusion in motorsport and adds host of the Driven by Diversity podcast to her impressive and growing CV. She's an inspiration to young people, male and female, from underrepresented backgrounds and beyond. We're here to listen to her life, career, thoughts and opinions. Arianna, welcome to the Motormouth podcast. Before we get into it, a really quick message. This show has grown into something far bigger than we ever imagined. It's been a huge honour to chat with F1 world champions like Nico Rosberg, legends like Mario Andretti, Jody Scheckter and Gerhard Berger, people right at the top of the sport like the brilliant Günther Steiner and current stars like Alex Albon, Lucas Degrassi and Tatiana Calderon. It really is a privilege. But without you, we wouldn't be able to continue. And without sponsors, we couldn't bring you the stories from the inner workings of the sport we all love. With that in mind, I'm over the moon to have F1 Experiences back with us to support the show for season 13. It's really important to us that we align with brands that are relevant and can add value to you. F1 Experiences is the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One, and it's the closest thing you can get to the pinnacle of motorsport. You can book with them today. With F1 Experiences' official ticket packages coming direct from Formula One, you can get unique access that simply isn't available anywhere else. For more information on how you can book your F1 Experience, visit f1experiences.com, where you can also save 5% on your very own F1 Experience package by using the code MMPODCAST when checking out online. Good things come to those who listen to the Motormouth podcast. Don't say we don't treat you well. So, what are you waiting for? The 2023 F1 season will be here before you know it, so go get booking your F1 Experience today with f1experiences.com.
Thank you. That was a very overwhelming introduction. Thanks.
Oh, glad
nice
you liked
to be
it.
With you guys.
Arianna, where are you joining us from today? Because your background's not giving too much away.
No, it's not. I'm actually at home for once. I got back from Vegas on Monday and I fly to Abu Dhabi on Monday.
How was Vegas?
Vegas was a lot. It was my first time in Vegas anyway. So it was a sensory overload. And it was just intense. It was intense. I'm glad to be back for a bit and to recover. It was good fun. The event was, it was good fun. I was hosting the launch party, the fan side of it throughout the day. And it was fab. Awesome. It was fab.
Wow. That's
was,
so
was
cool.
Was the fan interaction like what you expected it? Cause I went out to Miami earlier this year and there was definitely a good mixture of people who aren't so interested in F1, but people really kind of getting into it. Like what was the fan group that you felt in Vegas?
They loved it. There were people that had been queuing from 5 a.m. Wow. A lot of people who had been queuing from 5 a.m. 6 a.m. They were super, super excited and passionate. It was a really good crowd actually, and quite a range of different people, all different ages, male, female, kids. So it was good to see. There were a couple of people who were probably just there for the vibes, but that's okay. We'll welcome them as well.
Of course. Well, I guess you get everyone from California as well, because that's the closest to that. Because we think of the US as a country, but actually with the vast size, it's kind of, you got to treat. I mean, if you're from New York, actually Canada's more your home race, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's kind of the way it plays out.
Yeah, totally. And Wendy, and you're flying to Abu Dhabi on Monday. So we're recording this the Friday before the Brazilian Grand Prix, for those that are listening. And so Monday, you'll be flying to Abu Dhabi. I'm also flying to the Middle East on Monday, but I'm going down to Dubai, so I probably won't see you on the flight. I'm flying at 9 a.m. on Monday.
I'm flying at 9 a.m.
To where? Dubai or Abu Dhabi?
To Abu Dhabi.
Maybe I am flying to Abu Dhabi. I thought I was going to
Maybe you should check your flight.
I need to check my flight. I land at like 8 p.m. or something like that. So
7:25.
Ooh, I need to sort my itinerary out.
What a life you live, Tim. Oh, I don't know. I'm a flight to Abu Dhabi or Dubai, I don't know.
Well, I'm not going for the F1, though. I'm there for golf, weirdly. So the F1 is going to be happening down the road in Abu Dhabi, and I'm going to be down Sheikh Zayed Road an hour in the wrong direction at the DP World Tour golf tournament. So weird. The world's gone upside down. So take us back to your younger years, your childhood. Where was it? Who was it with? Was motorsport in the household? When did that seed first start showing itself?
So I grew up in London, South London, born and raised, and I have three older brothers. So I've grown up in like a very male dominated space anyway. Got three older brothers. I also have a little brother now, but he's substantially younger than me. So obviously when I was growing up, he hadn't blessed my life yet. But in terms of motorsport, my dad is an F1 fan. So that's kind of where it came from, like a lot of females who are interested in motorsport. I can remember it being on in the background. I remember like having little bits and bobs related to F1 around the house, like little model cars and things like that. And then we had our loft completely set up as a Scaletrics track, like this nice. Massive one. So like every family gathering, my brothers and friends and cousins, etc., would come over and we'd all like do competitions. So it was kind of around in that sense, but I wouldn't say I followed it closely from when I was a child all the way to now. It was just something that I was aware of and was sort of engaged with. I sort of knew what was happening. Like, you know, I knew all about Michael Schumacher and the greats, but I didn't follow it in terms of watching the races myself, week in, week out. And then as I grew up, I sort of drifted from it a little bit, you know, got my own interests. My brothers themselves aren't into it. Actually, it's only me out of the family, which is quite strange. And then I sort of revisited it as I got older. I'm not into any other sports. So it's literally just F1 and motorsport. But now, can't get me away from it.
Yeah. And you went to uni in Nottingham, right? And studied economics. So at this point in your life, were you thinking, well, I'm going to go into economics or, you know, the commercial world? Or did you ever foresee your life going on in the direction it has?
It's such a good question. I would say maybe a tiny part of me did. I went to university and did economics because I've always been very academic and I've always really enjoyed studying, loved studying, loved economics. So it was just the natural route for me to just follow that. It was the easy route for me. And I loved my time at uni, but I didn't go to university with the mindset of, oh, I'm going to finish uni and then I'm going to get this graduate job and I'm going to work, you know, corporate life and blah, 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 blah. That's not really how I saw it all playing out. So even at university, when everyone was applying for their internships and like graduate jobs, I could not bring myself to do it. Like, I couldn't force myself to do it. I was just not interested. I just wasn't passionate about any of those things. So that's when I sort of started being like, oh my crap, there's clearly something not quite right here, because I'm super academic, I'm really good at what I do, but I don't want to do this long term. Then I graduated and I was like, oh shit, like what do I do now? Took a gap year and, you know, used that as an excuse to like bum around for another year. And then in the back of my mind all this time, I've been like, I really want to get into presenting. So I'd done work experience when I was at school with Channel 4 and it'd always been in the back of my mind, but it's one of those things that's such a massive leap from what I was doing. Like, oh yeah, I'm going to leave my economics like background and I'm going to jump into presenting, even though I have no experience whatsoever. So it was something that was just on the back burner. My parents were also a bit like, are you okay? Like, what are you talking about? You've just paid like $9,000 a year for 3 years. I also actually changed university. I went to a different university initially and then changed to Nottingham. So it was actually 4 years of $9,000. So my parents were like, whoa, like, hun, calm down a minute. And then in my gap year, I got approached by a graduate job. So I thought, oh, okay, like, I've got to pay the bills at some point. So let me take this job, see how it is. Fell into consulting. And it served its purpose. I did 4 years there. So I did like a good stint. And it was good fun. I learned a lot. I made some like amazing friends, but it was never something that excited me. Like, I wasn't excited to go to work, or I didn't in 10 years' time.
What are you consulting on? This is Protiviti?
Protiviti. Protiviti. Yeah.
So what are you consulting on at that point?
What a question. no, I started on a rotational course. So you would rotate around internal audit, risk and compliance, tech consulting, and business performance improvement. And then I did a bit of fraud stuff as well. So
by all accounts, a cool job, a good job.
Yeah. A great graduate job, lots of travel, lots of independence. It was a fantastic job. And that's what I mean by it did serve its purpose. But I just was not passionate about it. I'm someone that really, really struggles to do things that I'm not passionate about or that make me happy. Like, I mean, to the extent that it's almost damaging to myself because I cannot force myself. So then I was like, okay, mate, like, I need to sort my life out a bit and have a think. And then things snowballed.
So what was it about presenting then? What kind of pulled you to that? Was that something you were interested in when you were a little kid and it was always in the back of your mind? And yeah, what is it about that kind of pulled you in?
I'm quite chatty anyway. Well, it's weird, actually. I was really shy when I was a kid. I was super shy. Like, I wouldn't even go to birthday parties when I was young unless my mum would stay with me. And because I had older brothers who were, like, quite protective of me, I didn't really need to be that vocal, and I was quite, like, protected. But I've always been quite confident, quite chatty, and I just love the idea of connecting with people. And even now, like, that's the bit that really draws me in to my job. I love connecting with people and being able to have a platform to speak to different people and hear from different people. And it just fills me with this, like, buzz that I can't explain. It's just when I finish a live hit or a live gig, I'm just, like, filled with adrenaline. It's just the best feeling.
And you started your own content, your own Formula One content. Was that the moment that, or did you do that with a preconceived plan? Or was it just, here are my views, I want to share my views and opinions with people? Or was it like, this could be my route into doing this full time?
Okay, first of all, I would use content loosely. I would use that word very loosely. Basically, what actually happened is I started an anonymous Instagram page that didn't have my name or face on it, and it was just an F1 news page. So you would never have known that I was behind it because I was too embarrassed to put my name to it. And I did that with the purpose of building up a following so that I could eventually soft launch myself onto the page without being so embarrassed.
Surprise!
Yeah, exactly. So I did that for a little while. And then I went to, when was it? I think it was when I went to the Singapore Grand Prix in 2019. And I was like, okay, now's the time. It's time to actually put my face out there. So I started making these Instagram videos of race build-ups on a Wednesday, qualifying recaps and race recaps. And the reason I say I use the term content lightly is because it was not content as we know it nowadays. Like, hats off to the content creators, because that is a job. And I'm looking at you guys. Mine was just me talking to camera. So it was no editing. It was no, like, it didn't look that great. It was literally just, here is me talking to camera, demonstrating that I can speak to camera and how I sound, how I look, how I convey myself. That was the only real purpose of it, to demonstrate, because obviously I didn't have a showreel. I'd not done any presenting or anything that I could use as an example. So that was kind of my way of building my own showreel without having one. And then... yeah, that was made solely with the purpose of trying to get a job in F1. That was literally its purpose.
Does that still exist?
Oh, wait.
No.
It's done the job as well.
No.
It has done the job, but I then got rid of that and removed evidence.
Because when I first started making YouTube videos in, like, 2015, you know, what you say about the whole presenting, and for me, subconsciously, it was like I wanted to get better at articulating myself and talking and speaking. I didn't really have ambitions to be any kind of presenter, but that was the kind of angle I came in at. Mm. And like you say, I mean, yeah, like, just speaking and talking to camera is enough. Like, that is what content is. It's more about the connection and the chat. And obviously, as F1's changed so much recently, like, those opportunities, I guess, and that audience has only kind of grown bigger. But, you know, when did you, what size was your platform? Like, it was Instagram first, right? Mm-hmm. What size was that when you decided to go to Singapore and put yourself out there? Like, how big was the page at that stage?
It wasn't very big. I think maybe 1,000 followers, maybe. It was still pretty small. And even when I did that, I still didn't tell any of my friends or family. Like, none of my friends knew about this for, like, ages. Because it's so, like, awkward, right? You're like, oh... like, you're going to be watching me, but then you know me in real life and you're then watching. It's just horrible.
I sympathize fully.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's horrible.
It? It's a funny thing. I think it's weird hearing your own voice for the first time is strange enough. And it's funny how you get used to it. I mean, when I first started doing the podcast, I would force myself to listen to my own voice and cringe while I was listening to it, because you've got to learn, haven't you, like listening and critiquing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't even listen to myself at all anymore. I don't want to hear it. But you get you get used to that kind of, especially, I guess, you know, people like you, Tom, you know, you're creating YouTube videos constantly. That's your life.
Yeah.
And you've got to edit them. You've got to listen to yourself.
I just constantly hear me say the same thing like five times.
Yeah, that
in
must
a row,
drive so you insane.
You know what? Like, I've honestly, I don't know whether I'm a narcissist because of this, but I'm just used to it now. Like, it doesn't. It's just
because
I know
it.
Some people who still can't do it. Like, they've been making YouTube videos for years, and they still can't bring themselves to watch their own videos back afterwards.
Yeah,
which I just think like that's such an important part for me. In my opinion, anyway, it's such an important part to be able to look and. You know, when people critique stuff, look at it and be like, try and look at yourself. I guess I kind of take myself away from it.
Yeah.
I guess, and I'm like, that's a different person. That's Tomo.
Yeah.
Tom, kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's weird. I think I'm going to go with the narcissist route. I think you just like looking at your own face and listening to your own voice. That's really why you've got a YouTube channel, isn't
Listen,
it?
Listen.
You sit there in the middle of the night flicking through your own videos. God, look at me. Let's dive into the whole diversity piece a little bit. So it's a hot topic. Obviously, people talk about it all the time. We've had things come and go. We've got W Series, which, you know, came in with a big bang, and obviously have had their issues of late. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen with that in the future? We've got various F1 teams engaging with female drivers and trying to create more female interest in the sport. Females in motorsport, the platform. That is doing fantastic things with zero backing. And, you know, they're doing it as volunteers, but getting some great numbers and a growing platform. Girls on Track, more than equal. There's lots of stuff out there at the moment. How have you seen, even in your relatively short career so far, have things changed? Are we moving the dial? Are things going in the right direction as far as diversity and inclusion for females or even underrepresented parts of the country? Are things heading in the right direction?
Yeah, I think things are headed in the right direction. There's been such a massive push over the last couple of years that I think it would be hard to say that it's not headed in the right direction. These things don't change overnight. Like, it's going to take years for us to see actual, meaningful, lasting, fundamental change. And I think that that can be difficult to except when obviously everyone's so passionate and wants things to change straight away. There are so many amazing initiatives like the ones you've just said, and I think they're doing fantastic work. There's still a lot of work to be done. There's still a lot more that could be done on all fronts to push greater diversity, make sure that we're supporting from the very bottom up. Like, it's got to come from every single level and every single angle in order for us to actually have a successful change in the industry. But we're headed in the right direction. I think that it's just now a case of keeping the momentum up. I feel like we had this massive push when we had Black Lives Matter, and that really helped push all diversity causes forward. It's very easy to then sort of be like, whoo, okay, that was intense, like, let's take stock a little bit, but like, kind of don't have the time to do that. We've got to keep the pressure up and keep going if we actually want to see change. So I think that's what's really important. And I think we've seen a lot of good efforts by different areas of the industry and more widely just in society of, you know, including people from different backgrounds, putting more females at the forefront, putting more people from underrepresented backgrounds at the forefront. But it has to go beyond just that. And this is something that I keep saying recently, is input is one thing, output is another. So you can bring people in who are from diverse backgrounds, you can bring them in, but are you actually making sure that the output is also changing?
Yeah.
And I think that's the next hurdle that we're really trying to get past. And I think that's what's really difficult, because it forces you to, I mean, I'm talking about this from more of a media content perspective, but it forces you to potentially, if you're an organization, put out content or whatever it might be, that you don't necessarily wholeheartedly understand or subscribe to, because it's not designed for you. And I think that that makes people uncomfortable, and that's difficult to process. If you're a company, why would I put something out that I can't actually buy into myself? But that is how you ensure that you're actually getting diversity. You shouldn't be able to engage with every single thing you put out unless you're only subscribing to a very niche target audience. And that's fine in a sense, right? Some people have a target audience and that is their sole target audience. But when you're talking about things like diversity, there is definitely like a responsibility, I think, for certain organizations and parts of the industry to ensure that the output is as representative as the input.
It's a fascinating subject and it's a complicated one because, I mean, my first race was in 2005 and I've seen my day job is sponsorship and marketing in Formula One. And I've seen that industry change in terms of female participation. So now, as you've probably seen, when you go to a Formula One race, many of the marketing teams or the PR teams, sponsorship teams are female, which is great.
Yeah.
But what I'm still not seeing is diverse ethnic minorities. I'm not seeing too much LGBTQ individuals, not talking about the stuff that brands are doing and F1 are doing with, you know, pride colors, you know, all that's happening. But where are the individuals? Where are the gay drivers? Where are the trans? I mean, we've got Charlie Martin, one. But where are they? And it's difficult because there are brands who will try and convey with their sponsorship LGBTQ messaging or diverse messaging. But then you step into the realms of like greenwashing or the equivalent, you know. Mm. So it's such a balancing act between all these things. But do you agree? Are you seeing females up and down the paddock, but perhaps not necessarily yet the ethnic minorities being represented?
Yeah, there's definitely been like a massive... I mean, I've only been in the paddock for a year and a half. My first race was Austria last year. So I've been in it literally from when all of this was sort of in the height of the push. There's definitely way more representation when it comes to females. Like there's definitely a lot more improvement in terms of when you're in the paddock, around the paddock. And even in terms of who comes to the races, like when we were in Austin, it was so nice because there were so many females that I've connected with online, for instance, on social media, who were all there and in the paddock and like doing their own thing, creating content. And it was amazing. It was like one of the nicest feelings. I would say there's a lot more work to do on the ethnic diversity front. And like you said, LGBTQ+. And it takes time and it's so many things that we're trying to push all at once. And like I said, it's just about keeping the momentum up and having people in the sport who are really being spokespeople for it. Like we've had Lewis, who's obviously amazing, and without him I think we would have been quite a few steps further back, but Lewis isn't going to be here forever and Lewis can't speak for every underrepresented group. We have to have other people sticking their head up. We've got Sebastian Vettel as well, but we need to have more of those people. It can't just be the drivers that hold the weight. There's got to be people throughout all of the organizations.
A very quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsors at F1 Experiences. F1 Experiences offer a wide range of packages that come direct from Formula One, giving you a unique experience of the pinnacle of motorsport. Official ticket packages come with the very best race tickets, first-class hotels and transfers, and unprecedented access, including driver appearances, private pit lane walks, behind-the-scenes tours of the illustrious F1 paddock, team garages, the famous podium, and loads more. It's the closest you can get to Formula One. And thanks to F1 Experiences, Motormouth listeners can get 5% off your next F1 Experiences package by using the code MMPODCAST when booking online at F1Experiences.com.
Yeah, because a lot of the focus is put on, you know, diversity amongst the drivers.
Yeah.
Like you said, this thing, it's going to take time. That we're not going to see the positive impact of female representation in W Series, because that impacts that's for the young girls watching, like the kids, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And giving them someone to look at. But what I think from a broadcasting point of view as well, and you're a prime example, Lizzie McIntosh, what she's doing as well, is that where anyone can pick up their phone and create videos and create content, it kind of, I think historically media's had that kind of big barrier to entry, like in order to get into people's living rooms and into people's TV screens, you had that big barrier. Now the fact that anyone could do it, like I'm seeing from a YouTube creator point of view, so many different people from different backgrounds, like approaching F1 and doing their thing and talking about the sport. More so actually, because again, I used to do football stuff back in the day. I feel like there is a greater, from what I've seen anyway.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Having been to football matches versus being to, you know, F1 races, I feel like amongst the fandom, and I think this is an issue with football, there's a greater diversity I'm seeing from both creators and from fans in F1. And it's just about amplifying those voices and giving people the, you know, the confidence to speak their mind, because everyone should have a seat at the table. The table's big enough, as far as I'm concerned.
But that's the problem, is getting them that seat at the table, because it's really interesting hearing what you're saying there, Tom, about the sort of the fan side of it, like the content creators, the people picking up their mobile phones and doing it are from all sorts of different ethnic backgrounds and so on. But they're not, for whatever reason, present company excluded, and one or two others, like you say, they're not getting into the paddocks, they're not working in the industry, they're not behind the wheel, they're not in the writing the articles in the papers, you know what I mean?
I feel like the mainstream acceptance of independent content creators like myself, like Ariana, like Lizzie, like plenty of others, like I think that's only started in the last kind of couple of years
to really be
acknowledged and taken on board.
Yeah,
I agree. I think that brands and companies are now seeing the benefit of it, but still not in its entirety.
I guess the other thing is, with the content, the boom of content creators, with that that power that they have, and Tom, you'll know this from your follow. I mean, you've got, you know, several hundred thousand people watching your YouTube content every day, and with that comes a certain amount of responsibility, doesn't it? Because if you say one wrong thing, I don't know if you're familiar, I follow a lot of boxing, so I watch True Geordie a lot and his podcast, and he's dropped a couple of clangers lately that he's apologized for, but he made a couple of Muslim references in really poor taste, which I won't repeat, but he it was an error. But he has, you know, a million or more YouTube subscribers, and with one passing comment, just bang, racist, and he's been ostracized, and then he's been, you know, slagged off by numerous people online. But his voice has gone off into the ears of young people all around the world, and he's taken no responsibility for that, apart from coming on and doing another YouTube video apologizing, where he actually cries, but at the same time he still monetized that content. You know, it's such a responsibility, isn't it, that we have, that you have, Ariana, as a presenter on TV, and Tom, that you have with your following, to make sure that the messaging stays on track.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing. It's very, I was going to ask, Ariana, I was going to ask this to you as well, actually, like, going from that stage where there is, you know, a small following and you build it gradually, to all of a sudden being in front of, like, I've found that difficult. I think at times at the start, you're a bit more, you know, with my stuff, a bit more kind of, oh yeah, I'm just going to chuck opinions out there and, you know, speak on things that I'm probably not as educated as I should be, because I'm coming from like you know, when you're chatting things, you know, with your mates down the pub or whatever, like you're chatting with. But then, you're right. Like, when there's so many more people out there watching, yet from my point of view, like, I'm still sat here in my study talking to a camera. Fundamentally, that hasn't changed. Yet there's so many more people taking on what I'm saying. And I guess, when you're presenting, you're still just presenting to a camera. It's impossible to actually quantify how many people are on the other end of that camera.
Yeah,
it is really difficult to adjust to. And I think I especially felt it when I joined Channel 4 this year, because I suddenly was like, whoa, like, this is completely different now. And I actually noticeably people I work with were like, Ariana, are you okay? Like, we've seen you're presenting, you're doing great, but are you actually okay? You seem like very scared. And it's because I was so worried that I would put a foot wrong. And suddenly I was like, oh my God, so many more eyes on me, like this is actual like TV broadcast. And I was like, and it took me a while to get past that. And I had to like go and I have presented like training coaching through Channel 4. And I went and spoke to them and they were like, you need to breathe. You need to actually like calm down. You've been hired because of how you portray yourself. And you're now like so scared that you've completely got rid of that. And like, you're just being super professional, which is fab, but that's not why we hired you. And I had to like really unpack it and take a step back. But it's because, like you said, we live in this society where one wrong step, one wrong word can see everything taken, like everything gone.
Cancelled.
That's it.
Cancelled.
Cancelled. That's terrifying.
Also, I was going to ask you, how was that? Because you said you did work experience at Channel 4, right? Like back when you were... Was that must have been pretty cool, like getting that hook up with Channel 4. And did you recognise anyone there from when you'd been at work experience before?
So my work experience was like a very like chill, low level. It was not really too heavily based in the broadcast side of things. But it definitely felt like a cute full circle moment. Like Channel 4 had always been like my goal in F1, if I'm completely honest. Like if you ask, I mean, I literally approached DC like, the first ever race I watched with F1, I went to every single member of the Channel 4 team that were there and was like, hi, I'm introducing myself. This is what I want to do. I'm just making it known now. Like, my goal is to work with you guys. And they were like, okay, who are you? Who are you? What are you doing here? I was like, this is my first race. And the thing is, Austria F1 race was my first ever presenting, full stop, in person. Like, I'd never done anything. So I don't know what sort of confidence came over me in that moment. But, yeah, it was crazy when I finally managed to get the deal with them. I was like, oh my God, I'm terrified.
Fair play though, for putting yourself out there and, you know, going for it. You know, it's not easy to go up to someone like David Coulthard and say, listen, I want to be on your show. It's a bold move, but it's paid off. Is there a particular part of the presenting game that you're particularly fond of? Like, do you like the trackside staff? Do you like the interviews with the drivers? Is there an area you really want to focus and hone in on?
I honestly adore my job, like all aspects of it. I genuinely love it, like I was saying. I think that for me, like I was saying earlier, the fan side of things and connecting with people and like speaking to people and engaging with them and actually like feeling like you're talking to them is what really excites me. I mean, I love interviewing the drivers and I have this huge, huge respect for them. So getting to talk to them and interview them is such an honor. But the human like interaction and connection that you get from fan facing things is just something that for me is like really hard to match. So on the one hand, I love that, like the Vegas thing. That's why I loved that so much, because it was like I was literally on stage talking to people, asking them where they're from, what they're doing. Like I felt like I connected with the people that I was presenting in front of, and that just fills my heart without sounding like utterly ridiculous. It really is a special feeling to be able to do that. And then the actual broadcast side of things, where you're sort of like host tying everything together, I really enjoy that as well. And you're like sort of the middle piece who's bringing not necessarily the punditry or the expertise, but you're there to tie it all together and bring the like more entertainment side of it, I guess, and more lighthearted side. Yeah, I like the vibes, guys. I like the vibes of being fun and chatting with people and entertainment side of it. I love it. Yeah.
I know you've spoken to a bunch of drivers now. Like, which driver have you had, is there a particular interaction that stands out as just being like you say, good vibes above all else?
So I've interviewed them all and they're all fab and they're all very good to interview, actually. I mean, unsurprisingly, I would say Danny Rick is one of the most fun to interview. I feel like he's just so chill. We had an interview in, so I do some Paddock Club interviews sometimes as well. And we had a couple of interviews, I think it was 2 weeks in a row. And one of them, he just comes in so chilled. And then like, I was asking him like, you know, what's your go-to song to listen to this weekend or whatever, because he always likes to have special playlists. And he was like, oh, I don't think it's appropriate. Like, I can't really say because like, it's quite a rude song and blah, blah, blah. So I don't want to say it. I was like, oh, okay, fine. Like, and I was like, okay, Danny, like, let's not do this because there are kids. And he was like, no, but I haven't sworn. And I was like, no, but still, it's a bit like much. And his PR are there, and I'm just like, oh my God, this is not me. And then within about 3 minutes, like, he's got someone doing a shoey in the crowd, like cheering him on. And I'm like, oh my God, his PR are never going to want me to interview him again. And then he comes back the next week. And again, it goes completely off script. And we're talking about like UFC and all these random things. And then we're so engrossed in the conversation. And then I'm like, oh wait, there's actually like a crowd here. And I turn and people are just like staring at us like, can you talk about F1? And I'm like, oh, sorry, guys. And Danny's just like, no, it's fine. Like, let's carry on talking about this. I'm like, no. We have to go back to the script. But he's just so chill. I love interviewing him. It's going to be a shame not to have him on the grid next year.
Yeah. Well, hopefully still in the paddock. Hopefully. Reserve driver. We'll see.
I hope.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it sort of feels like a bit, you know, being a reserve driver for someone like him feels like a bit of a, you know, I'd almost rather see him just disappear
short
completely
memories,
and come
short
back.
Short memories, you know.
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, let's get your take on F1. You're obviously a fan. What have you made of this season? Are you excited for next season? Can Lewis go on and get his eighth?
I think this season has been good. I think it's hard to follow on from what last season was. I think that was just like, whew, like took it all out of us. And so I think it would have been really difficult to follow on with the same level of intensity and excitement that we had. Having said that, it's still been a good season. I think it's a shame, a real shame that we didn't have more of a battle between Red Bull and Ferrari. I would have really loved to have seen that go down to the wire a bit more. But at the same time, Max has been absolutely supreme, and it's been pretty impressive to watch him just absolutely dominate this season. So I'm glad we've been able to see like fantastic driving, and, you know, it's good to see someone at their best. I would have liked to have seen more battles, but I think last year probably, I don't know if I would have survived another year. Like, that's really
I think last year set kind of maybe unrealistic expectations moving forward, especially going into a brand new set of regulations where that typically stretches the grid out anyway. This is what I mean. Like, if it's still been, especially in the midfield, it's been really close. Like, you go through, I think third and fourth is really close. Fifth and sixth is really close. Seven and eighth is really, like, you've got those battles there. And it's just like, I think next season's going to be quality. Like,
I'm so excited for next season. I'm really excited for next season, and I'm really excited for the newbies joining the grid. I'm so intrigued to see how that's going to play out. Like, Piastri going up alongside Lando.
Class.
How is that going to go? Like, I just want to see it. Nick De Vries as well, Logan, and then also Pierre moving to Alpine. I'm like, how is this actually going to play out?
Yeah.
What's actually going to happen there? I need to know now, but we have a few months to wait.
We know there's been drama in the past. So
I know, but it's like, it's so like, no, like, that's in the past. And we're here and we're one team, and with a French team, it's going to be like strong and we're all cool. And I'm like, yeah, but even when you don't have like a not great relationship with someone, it still can get pretty like fighty when you're going up head to head, especially if things are close, right? So how is it going to play out if it does get to that? I just can't wait.
And even more so if Alpine give them a competitive car, which they're looking the next closest to, like, joining that top three.
Exactly.
That's where we get Hamilton Rosberg 2016 vibes.
Yeah.
I'm here for the drama. I'll be honest. I'm here for the drama.
I'm living for the drama.
Helps the views, Tomo. Helps the views. Now, we're rapidly running out of time. We've sped through 40 minutes. Couple more just before we come on to our final three. First of all, your long-term future. As a presenter, it's tough, isn't it? I've spoken to Jenny Gow about this in the past, where it's like you can get a contract and then it ends and you're one job to the next, and it's hard to plan long-term into the future. But do you have a long-term plan?
It is hard to plan long-term. I mean, for now, my focus is F1 and continuing to build on that, because it feels like I've been doing it for a while, but like I said, I've only been doing it since June last year. I only quit my day job in September last year, so it's mad, you know, it's mental. This, like, it's mad to process, but for now, yeah, I need to still cement myself a bit more in F1. I feel like I'm now getting to a point where I'm able to be more comfortable actually being myself. When I came in, I was quite scared and terrified, and, you know, it's easy to sort of try to fit yourself in a box a little bit slash like follow the mold of what's been. Whereas now I'm getting more comfortable and I'm being booked for jobs where I'm able to just completely be myself. And I'm absolutely loving that. So I want to explore that a bit more in F1. I do want to also branch out of just F1 because, as I said, presenting is like my passion, and F1, but there are other things that I'm sure I could pair the presenting with it. I'd love to, but I'm just trying to enjoy things as they happen, because one thing I have realized this year is that time absolutely flies in this industry. Yeah. And I don't want to get too caught up in looking at the next thing and chasing the next thing and lose sight of what I've got, because I kind of had a phase this year where I was doing that. I was just like constantly like, okay, but what's next? What's next? What's next? Yeah. And then I was like, well, I've ticked off these things and I didn't even realize. So I need to find a bit more of a healthy balance.
Yeah, definitely. No, absolutely. Like, Ariane, it's so inspirational looking at what you've achieved. I think for so many people, and even someone like myself, like, who's kind of, you know, started independent, and the fact you've been able to achieve so much is, yeah, I mean, you're definitely like flying the flag for a lot of people. And anyone watching and listening who maybe, you know, sees a similar, like, has that same love, whatever background they're from, whatever gender they are, whoever they are, like, what's the biggest piece of advice you would give to anyone who's looking to kind of break through and achieve what you've kind of achieved? In, again, you've kind of gone from, you know, independent working full time to all of a sudden now you're in this opportunity, and you've, like, all credit to you for getting there. You know, what advice would you give?
I think you have to find what you truly love, and you have to believe in yourself like 110%. I think that it's really easy, and you guys probably like get this as well. You get lots of people who want to work in the industry in some capacity, right? They just want to work within F1. And I don't think that that is how you become truly successful. Like, you have to really know what specifically excites you and what you're passionate about, because when you're in it, it is intense and it takes over your whole entire life. So you have to truly love every aspect of it. Like, you have to really believe in what you're doing, and you have to believe in yourself so much, because it's not easy. There's only so much room for, you know, presenters or mechanics or drivers. Like, it's a niche sport. It's limited in how many people can be hired at any one time. That's not to say that like everyone's welcome, but there is still limited capacity. So you have to really, really believe in yourself and work bloody hard to get there. You have to be willing to sacrifice a lot, and you have to keep faith. And you could only do that, like I said, if you really love it. Like, I've lost count of how many times, like when I was doing my podcast, like how many times you'd have a breakdown crying. Like, even at some races, there have been times where I'm like, oh my God, like, this is a lot. And you are on the brink and you're away from home and it's a lot. But then I'm like, man, I'm doing the job I absolutely love. Like, I truly love this. Like, if I actually jumped on a plane right now and went home, I would be crying the whole way home because I'm going home. So, like, you have to be able to truly love it and truly, truly push yourself to get past those barriers, and just be yourself. Otherwise, you're not going to succeed. You're just not. It's not going to happen.
Great advice.
And if you love what you do, then you'll never work a day in your life. That's the
if we're doing it. Cheesy one liners.
Supposedly,
I listen to loads of podcasts. And,
okay, so are you stealing a cheesy one liner?
Yeah, this is not mine. Okay, so but it's. I listen to, if I'm at the gym or something where I'm really bad at motivating myself for the gym. I don't like going, but I'll force myself to go. And the only way I can get through it is by either listening to like crazy music or listening to motivational speeches. It's my only way.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And
okay.
They have to be shouty American style motivational speeches. Otherwise, I just give up. So
that's really intense.
It's really intense. but there was one line that this guy said that stuck with me for like the last 6 months, and he shouted at me through my headphones on this podcast, "What you go through, you grow through." And it was the one line that I was like, "Oh, I like that. I'm going to use that." I say it to other people now, and they're like, "Oh, shut up! What a cheesy one-liner." But for me, I was like, "Well, that really resonated with me somehow. Like, what you go through, you grow through, and you're only going to develop by embracing these experiences. You know, putting your neck out." You know, going up to Coulthard and saying, "I'm going to work for your company," And you grow through these experiences. So for me, that was a really, really nice one that I use with other people, and they generally laugh in my face. But you know,
Tim, have you ever had it where you've inadvertently not fully plugged in your headphones, so then everyone else in the gym can hear all these motivational quotes, and you're just giving it some on the treadmill?
Yeah, I might try that next time. It's so good though. But Spotify has fully got my algorithm sorted. Like I go to the gym, and it's just like serving me these angry Americans telling me to get off my ass and do something with my life.
I might try that.
It's brilliant.
I feel like I'm not sure how I'd feel, but might try it.
I leave the gym basically going, I'm going to start a new business. I'm going to do this. I'm going to lift heavier weights. I'm going to move to Azerbaijan and to do this. You know, it goes off. Right, listen, we've kept you long enough. We have three quick fire questions, which we finish all of our shows with. These are brought to us by our friends and sponsors at F1 Experiences. I'll kick off this week. What's got you excited at this very moment?
The future of F1 from a fan perspective and content perspective is very exciting.
Great.
I couldn't agree more with that. Next question. What? How much of your success do you put down to luck/right place, right time versus good old-fashioned hard work?
I put pretty much all of it into hard work. I think that I've been blessed to have certain people who have been really supportive come into my life and help me grow and develop. But I have worked my ass off. I really have. So, yeah, I think the majority of it is hard work.
Fair play. Final question for you. What are you scared of?
In a trivial sense or work-related.
Whatever you want.
What am I scared of? I'm scared of not reaching my full potential, and I'm scared of not enjoying things because I'm constantly looking for the next thing. And I'm also I don't know if I should say this because people might then start sending me pictures of it, but I have a phobia of those holes. You know, I don't know if you've heard the hole phobia.
There's a name for that.
Yeah.
Trichophobia. I've got it.
Yes. Oh my God, I feel so less weird.
I've been waiting for this moment. 142 episodes in, someone has shared my fear of tiny holes. So
yeah, I have a fear of that.
It's making me go weird now. It's making me go weird. Yeah. If you Google like tiny holes,
There's certain plants, or
the skin with perforations.
Oh my God. So I'm kind of scared of that.
I'm totally on board with that. I hate it. It's called, it begins with T. It's trichophobia, triophobia, or something.
Imagine you two on like 10 years' time on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and they just bring you the plant.
Oh my God, stop it. I shouldn't have said this because now people are going to like start DMing me this. And like,
I had this. Harry does it. And various people will send me. My father-in-law, Vaughan, he will regularly print off pictures of tiny holes and put them like inside my laptop. So when I open my laptop,
I don't think he likes you.
I know, yeah. There's a message. There's a hidden message. I'm totally on board with that. Well, listen, Arianna, thank you for joining us. Really, really inspirational. And hopefully this helps any young people that are listening to this that are just wondering whether to take that step and push themselves and get into that that presenting world or whatever field they might be in. If they come from an ethnic minority or they're a female in a male-dominated environment, I think really inspirational words that you've shared with us today. Very articulate. You've obviously got loads of talent. All the best for the future, and I'm sure we'll see you trackside soon. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, guys. It's honestly been a pleasure. Thank you.
Before you go, one final reminder to check out F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the sport. Official ticket packages, which include the best race tickets, first-class hotels, travel and exclusive behind-the-scenes access across a Grand Prix weekend, F1 Experiences offer packages like no other. So, to book your F1 Experiences package, head online to f1experiences.com, and if you enter the code MMPODCAST, you'll get 5% off as well.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth_, Instagram at Motormouth_official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description information to find out how you can help cure brain tumours quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth Podcast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.